to Dear Hank and John.
Or as I prefer to think of it, Dear John and Hank.
It's a podcast where two brothers answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. John, can you believe that it is 374 days until Christmas and people already have their Christmas decorations up?
All right, I'm going to rewrite the joke. Here's the new joke.
Okay.
John, did you know that people already have their Christmas decorations up, even though it's 374 days until Christmas? Put the punchline at the end. That's my advice. I'm not a stand-up comic.
I don't know. I guess.
I have learned that over the years.
I feel like you start them out and they're confused. They're like, that's not usually how we talk about time. More than 365, that doesn't exist.
All right.
I don't know. I was really happy with it. But thanks for working it out with me, John. I appreciate
the
feedback.
I'm just trying to work it out. Yeah. Hey, speaking of working things out, you might remember in a recent episode of the podcast, like a post-cancer episode.
Mm-hmm.
You said...
As they're called.
I think it is sort of a before and after moment, Hank. Like, I don't want to exaggerate it or anything, but you did get cancer.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, we were musing on why Swiss cheese is kind of not a good deal because it's got all the holes in it.
Yeah.
And you're basically paying for air. You're paying for the holes.
All that air. Yes. Uh-huh.
Well, I don't think I mentioned this to you, but about 16,000 people wrote in... And do you know what they said? Have you figured it out yet?
Cheese is sold by weight.
Cheese is sold by weight, Hank.
I don't buy cheese by weight. I buy cheese by slice because I'm that kind of man.
You buy it by volume. You're like, hey, I want that 8-inch by 8-inch by 8-inch cheese. How much is it? Well, I'll tell you one thing I don't have to do.
Centimeter.
Weigh it. I don't have to weigh it to tell you how much it is because that's not how I sell it. I sell it by volume.
I buy cheese by the liter. It's weird, but I do it.
But even if you bought, my point is that even if you bought it by the liter, it would still be, I guess it would be liquefied Swiss cheese, but it would still be the same issue. It's only if you buy it by area.
Yeah, that's what, a liter is area. Liter is a unit of volume. Thank you. It's okay if you don't understand all the different units.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. You're telling me that a liter is an amount of volume?
Yeah, man. What else do you think it was?
I thought it was a weight.
You know, it is directly transferable to a weight as long as it's water.
Because like 12 fluid ounces is a weight, right?
12 fluid ounces is a volume.
What about 355 milliliters? How can 12 fluid ounces be a... No, because 16 fluid ounces is one fluid pound, which is definitely a weight. An ounce is a weight.
An ounce is a weight. But I think a fluid ounce isn't. Because I think a fluid...
Respectfully, you don't sound good. Like, if you are right, it's shocking. It's shocking to me that that 12 fluid ounces would be an amount of space... Rather than a weight.
12 fluid ounces is an amount of space. I'm sorry. Ounces? If you wanted ounces, you could just leave out the fluid. Fluid ounces is an amount of volume, and it is defined by ounces of water, specifically, which has the density of water.
Let me ask you a very serious question.
Uh-huh.
The Diet Dr. Pepper that I am drinking right now, which, by the way, is great. I've noticed that with Diet Dr. Pepper... Depending on like the air quality, the heat, the moisture level and everything, I taste one of the different 23 flavors more profoundly with each Dr. Pepper.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting a lot of plum on this one. Anyway.
Do you know that's why they put the bubbles in soda is so that they don't have to put as much liquid in there?
Well,
Boom.
That's not true.
Because they put all the bubbles in there. So that they don't have to sell you as much soda. It's a scam, like the chips in the bags with all the air in the chip bag.
I genuinely can't tell if this entire thing is a bit or
John,
if you're telling me the truth.
Do you know how they make Swiss cheese? Why it's Swiss cheese? Because it's made with whole milk.
I know. Okay. Hank, is 12 fluid ounces a weight or is it a volume?
Because... doesn't.
Just tell me the truth.
H-O-L-E, whole.
I understand the joke. I am
fluid ounces
flummoxed.
Is a unit of volume.
That's so I just need to know where the line is between the bit and not the bit.
Okay.
Is it when you say 12 fluid ounces is an amount of volume, not a weight, is that a bit?
No, that's true fact. Fluid ounces are a unit of volume. Just like liters are a unit of volume. The 1 liter of water weighs exactly 1,000 grams or 1 kilogram.
Right, but there's bubbles in here. So you're telling me that if I just want to confirm this.
Okay.
If I weighed the Diet Dr. Pepper.
Yes.
It would weigh less than 12 ounces.
No. No, because...
Shut the front door. Then it's a measure of weight. I'm sorry, but that's literally the definition of a measure of weight, is that 12 ounces is 12 ounces.
You're right. I think it would weigh more than 12 ounces because high fructose corn syrup is heavier than water. And that the bubbles are inconsequential.
Either way.
The bubbles were a bit... The bubbles are not in... Before you open the can, the bubbles aren't in there. There's no bubbles. It's carbon dioxide dissolved in the water, like the sugar is dissolved in the water.
Oh,
and everything
wow.
else is dissolved in the water. So there's no... The bubbles aren't there until you open it and the bubbles come out.
It's
and as
like
the bubbles
Schrodinger's
come out,
cat. I've learned more about soda pop in the last 3 minutes
seven
than
and a
I
half
did in my entire
of
life.
Podcast. Yeah.
What? Okay, all right.
Maybe
so
a little
first
over-focused
off, there's no bubble. There's no bubbles in the Dr. Pepper until I open it, at which point there are magically bubbles because that's just how chemistry works. I can get behind that.
Okay.
But you're telling me that 12 fluid ounces of Diet Dr. Pepper weighs more than 12 ounces. That's a stunner. That's a shock. That is and this is as somebody who's consumed quite a lot of Diet Dr. Pepper, that might be the biggest surprise. Since April, when you called to tell me that you had cancer, right? When I was coming back from Sierra Leone, I knew exactly what I was going to do with my life. I was hyper-focused on tuberculosis, except no, not really. I got a new job called CEO of Complexly.
I looked it up, John, and 12 fluid ounces of soda weighs about 12.5 ounces, unless it's diet soda, in which case it weighs about 12 ounces.
Good God.
So you get more soda if you get regular soda.
Only by weight, not by volume.
I'm so proud of that joke. More math, so it's more stuff. Joke. Like, it is literally more. That's like saying
it's just denser. It's just denser. It's literally not more stuff.
Okay.
It's the same amount of stuff, denser.
You deliver me a cube of air.
Yeah.
That's less stuff than if you deliver me a cube of bricks. You agree?
It's not less stuff. It's just less density.
There's fewer molecules. There's more molecules in a regular soda than a diet soda.
Indeed, you have identified the nature of density.
Or at least more not necessarily, because there's you also got to count the protons and the neutrons. That's actually what the mass is. So there are more protons and neutrons in a regular soda than a diet soda.
Correct.
This is a true, definitely true fact, and is not a bit. It sounds like a bit. It's also a bit, but it's true too.
I genuinely, y'all at home listening, I don't know if it's a bit. I'm going to have to look it up later. Because Hank is using the same tone of voice when he's bitting and when he's not bitting.
I know I am. It's the tea. I had tea, but... I think just English breakfast. From now on.
Oh, it's the caffeine. I get it.
I'm going to start pricing things per molecule. Like I want to go in or per proton. I want to go into the store and instead of being like, this costs this much per ounce. No, I want you to tell me how much it costs per atomic particle.
Well, I certainly need that now that I know that half the stuff that I'm buying by weight, I'm not buying by weight. I'm buying by volume.
Yeah. And I buy cheese per slice, people.
So you're telling me that when I buy a gallon of ice cream, I'm not buying a weight of ice cream.
And when you buy a gallon of ice cream, you are buying a volume of ice cream. Gallon is a volume.
So I buy a gallon of ice cream, mm-hmm. and I might have, they might have put a bunch of air in there to make
it. Yeah, fluff it up.
A more
like
aerated
Dippin' Dots?
Ice
Definitely
cream.
Definitely a bunch of air in Dippin' Dots.
Well, like, so between ice cream brands, there could be a different amount of ice cream for the same price, and you have no way of knowing that because they're both 1 gallon. The only way you could know that is if there was what I think we should call proton price transparency.
Proton price transparency, PPT.
PPT.
The future. We're going to have a grocery store, the new Good Dot Store grocery store, available at your corner market. It has PPT, unlike every other store in America. It's very confusing and no one likes it.
The great thing about PPT is that everything seems so inexpensive, right? Like you get so many protons per penny.
It's like 5 × 10⁻⁹ cents per proton.
I was thinking it would be more like how many protons per dollar. So it would be like 10³ protons per dollar.
Right.
Then you'd look at another thing, ice cream, and it'd be like 10⁻72 or 6⁻72 protons. And you'd be like, ah, God, I mean, you know, that's a difference, but is it going to change my life?
How much does a proton cost is an amazing title for a video.
It is a good, I mean, that's the kind of video that you'll still make, you know, but I'm over.
Yeah,
I'm never
no, I could absolutely make how much does a proton cost? And like, how much does a proton of gold cost? Very different from how much does a proton of air cost? Because thankfully, air continues to, as far as I can tell, be mostly free.
Yeah, mostly. Well, I mean, this has been an education unlike any other. Today, yeah. I learned so much about Diet Dr. Pepper, about ice cream, about protons, about their cost, about the lack of transparency in the volume business.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I asked you this thing about Swiss cheese, but I also want to ask you this question from Kimberly.
Uh-huh.
Because it's a volume question.
Yeah.
Dear John and Hank, I like Jenga. You know that game Jenga where you pull out the little pieces of wood and eventually the tower falls over?
Of course I do.
Well, I just figure some listeners at home might not, you know, so I wanted to lay good. The land for them.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
It's a super simple game. There's not much to it, Kimberly reports. It's fun. But why are some blocks harder to pull than others? Like, aren't they all the same size? Are they not? What's the weight distribution there? Just how? Baffled by the gravity of the situation? Kimberly, I'm so glad you asked. It's actually not possible to produce two wooden blocks with the same number of protons.
There has never been
never
two
happened.
Jenga blocks with the same number of protons.
They're like snowflakes.
It's, well, you know, it's possible. It's just extremely unlikely.
Yeah, and the thing is, Jenga would have to put a lot, like billions of dollars of work into making, you know, nanometer-specific cuts.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
micrometer
and, well, and they don't want that
cuts.
Because they want it to be tricky.
So do you know the answer to this?
You just told me the answer. The answer is that the Jenga blocks are different sizes.
That's true, but I also do think that it's partly about how you stack. I think the stack also is never quite perfect.
I don't think that's it.
Well, I do.
I think that if you had, well, imagine, put it in your mind. Build in your mind the imaginary laser-cut metal blocks that are all
because
exactly the same size, and you put the calipers on
them. When I close my
them.
Eyes and I picture something, do you know what I see?
I'm sorry. I feel bad.
I see nothing. And so thank you for making a joke about this thing that
a,
I, is a talent
joke. Wasn't
I don't
making
have.
A joke. I wasn't.
All right, I'm gonna close my eyes. There's nothing there. Describe to me what I'm supposed to be seeing, and I can maybe make words
just,
for it.
So they're perfectly cut silver metal Jenga blocks.
Yeah, I don't see them, but I know what you mean.
And they can and they slide into each other so tightly that there's not even a seam. Like you can't like you put the three together, you can't even tell there's three there. It looks as if there's just one block now that's a square, and then you lay more down. They're just gonna like they're just that they, like you're gonna take one of those out, and that tower will remain exactly as solid as it has always been. In fact, now that I'm saying this, I want to build this Jenga set. And
yes, but what I would say, well, first off, I think you're absolutely right that the main thing is that the blocks are different sizes, and we can get into that. But I would say that if you stack differently, like if you stack one so that they aren't perfectly aligned because you're a human being, not a robot.
But what makes it not perfectly aligned?
What do you mean? What makes it not perfectly lined? When you're stacking three of these blocks
on top
of three of these blocks
on the thing that you're putting it on.
Yeah. But you're not going to align these three perfectly next to those three. You're always going to be a little bit off because you're a person who's doing it with person fingers that are notorious for their lack of precision, right? And that's going to slightly redistribute
the
weight.
Sure, I can see. Yeah.
In such a way that one of the three is going to be easier to pull off than the others. However,
I think it's just the size difference. And I think I'd like to make a perfect Jenga set that has no size difference and see what it's like to play with. The problem is it's going to be very expensive. And people love to steal board games because they are risk takers.
I've never in my life had someone come over to my – I've had people steal lots of things from my house. I've never in my life had someone come over to my house and steal a freaking Jenga game, and nor have you.
I want people to go on the Nerdfighteria subreddit and answer whether you got the risk taker joke on the first time, which John clearly did.
Oh, they are risk takers. No, it's not – I mean, I get it, but I don't want to indulge it.
That's it. We're done. We did it. I got three in. We're done.
Wikipedia reports the blocks have small random variations so as to create imperfections in the stacking process to make the game more challenging. I actually think it makes the game less challenging.
It's intentionally. Yeah. Because you just like some of them are just like you could blow them out.
Yeah. Well, so there you go. It's intentional, but I still think that how we stack matters. I believe that we cannot remove the human element from Jenga. And the stacking The stacking is where inevitably we create our own imperfections.
That's going to be John's perspective on this, and I'm going to let him have it. This next question comes from Sarah Ann Carter, who asked, "Dear Hank and John, if the rock of the moon was a different color, would it be as bright? Like if the moon was black or pink, would the moonlight look different to us? Need to know." Various emojis, pumpkins and spice penguins, Sarah and Carter.
Penguins spiced.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, you spice the pumpkins. Maybe not the penguins.
I'm concerned about the penguins.
Yeah.
Oh, man, did I tell you about the dream I had about a gigantic penguin who abducted a baby?
You did. I think maybe you mentioned it on the podcast.
No, that was a pelican.
Oh, yeah, right. It was a pelican. Did you have another bird abducting a baby dream?
Yeah, and they were stuck underneath the ice together. And I had to save them. And the penguin.
Oh, no.
John. Yeah, but he kept it warm, and so everybody lived.
Wow.
It was intense. I don't know that I could have.
Did you have a pole axe?
It was one of those things where, like, I didn't have anything, and then suddenly I did, you know? Like, yeah. I was like, whew, thank God I got this gigantic axe.
Yeah. That's nice that your subconscious delivered you a way out of the anxiety rather than just like ramping it up over and over again, which is sometimes what it seems to want to do.
Is that what you're
saying? It's like, oh,
you had
a pole axe, but now you don't. The pole axe is made out of rubber. Ha ha ha.
Is that what yours is doing at the moment?
Not really, no. But it certainly has in the past. I feel like a pole axe would be a good tool for getting a baby out of ice.
I don't know what a pole axe is exactly. I just had kind of a regular axe, but it was – is it called a mace when on one side it's got that sort of hammer thing and on the other side it's an axe? Because that's what this was. It was hammer on one side, axe on the other.
A mace is just like a big heavy ball on one side. A pole axe is like an axe on a pole.
I would never have guessed that. Yeah. Next, you'll tell me that 12 fluid ounces of Diet Dr. Pepper just happened to weigh 12 ounces.
It's super weird.
It is very weird.
I mean, strange that 12 fluid ounces of Dr. Pepper weighs 12 and a half ounces.
And that 12 fluid ounces of Diet Dr. Pepper weighs 12 ounces.
Yeah.
It's all very
protons.
Weird.
Protons.
Protons. Boils down to protons. I'm making this podcast I can't talk about yet. In the podcast I can't talk about yet, we talk about protons. And I'll tell you what, protons are an astonishment.
Yeah, right?
Like,
stuff, right? Can you believe
it? The more you zoom into the proton, the weirder it gets.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Okay, Hank.
Yes, we didn't answer the question.
What was the question?
What would the world be like if the moon was a different color? So the moon is I think a little bit. So if you had like white on one side and black on the other, like whitest white, blackest black, the color of the moon would be closer to black than white. So it looks white to us when we look at it.
It does.
Because it's like on the background of like perfect blackness, and also it's being hit by an awful lot of sunlight. So the stuff the light that's being shined back at us makes it look like it's lighter than it is. So if it were white, the moon would be so bright. So bright.
How bright?
It would be way brighter.
Could we work at night? Would we have developed a completely different civilization?
You know, that's a great question. And also not at all unthinkable in terms of how moons can be. Like, there are ice moons of other planets, so we could theoretically have an ice moon. And if it were bigger and made of ice, it would be very bright in the sky. And I could totally see the times when there is a full moon and the moon is out, that it would be totally workable to be outside and doing stuff.
Wow.
That's cool.
It would be about eight times as bright as it is at present.
You looked that up? Or you did the math?
Yeah, no, I did the math, Hank. You know me.
And it would be, you know, if it were twice as big, that would probably not just be twice as much light. It would probably increase as a square. So it would be,
Times as bright. Wow. So if it's like eight times as bright, I mean, I'm not good at multiplying magnitudes of light, just to state the obvious. But I think certainly on a full moon, even two or three times as bright, you could do most things.
I mean, you can do a lot with just the full moon as is. Now you got to remember clouds.
You got to remember clouds. So, but the clouds would be brighter.
Clouds would, for sure.
So you would look
up
and you wouldn't
see. Depends on how thick the clouds are. Yeah.
And you know what else? You know what else you wouldn't see as much of is stars.
Certainly not on a moonlit night.
Yeah. And not on a cloudy night either, just to state the obvious.
We're so good at podcasting.
We're so good. I mean, Jesus Christ. How does this podcast fly under the radar, Hank? I don't understand, you know? It's like in 2007 when we would call each other and when we had like 100 YouTube subscribers and we'd be like, this is good, right? Like, we're pretty good at this.
I think we're good. But here's what I want to know. Could you spray paint the moon so that it's a bunch of different colors, and they show up at like different times? So like when it's a half moon, you divide the moon into four quarters.
Yes.
And you have like a blue quarter and you have a purple quarter and a green quarter and a yellow quarter. And then when they're all lit up, then it's like, look at that big, beautiful, colorful moon and all those colors get mixed together. But like as it goes through the phases, you get different colors of moon.
That'll piss off the homophobes. Rainbow moon. We'll show them.
The moon has gone woke. But it's best if it just happens rather than.
Yeah, exactly. If it just happened one day, if the moon actually did go woke and all the people were like, this is not what God intended, even though it does appear that God did it.
We don't know how else it could have gotten done, but we're pretty sure it was the elites at the universities.
Seems like something tenured professors would do. Yeah, exactly. Like all the scholars of 18th century German literature got together and made the moon woke. I knew it was coming.
Mm-hmm.
I love this, Hank. This is a great idea. This is the best idea you've ever had. I think that we should invest all of humanity's available resources in making a rainbow moon.
Yeah, the blue moon is when it's like twice in 1 month.
Yeah.
And the woke moon is when it comes out at all.
I thought you said you were done with the puns. We've got a really important question from Dana, who writes, Dear John and Hank, I recall you discussing Hank's journey of meaning this time last year. Remember when you were on a journey of meaning? We didn't know.
Yeah.
Was it the cancer talking? Was the cancer on a journey of meaning? A journey of meaning to be discovered? And who knows? Given the everything way to refer to it, Dana, the everything is a good way to refer to it. I was wondering, how's that journey of meaning going, Dana?
Dana!
How is your journey of meaning going, Hank?
I remember, so I was recently did the Nerdfighteria census analysis, which you can find on Hank's channel, and I was reading through people's comments, and there were a lot of comments that were like, I'm worried about Hank's health.
and this was last year. This was before, this was pre-cancer. It was pre-cancer. You were just giving off vibes.
I'm really worried about
it. No, because you were working so hard.
I was. And now I am again. Like, it's...
No,
it's
not as hard.
No, and also not as stressful. Like, the work that I've been doing lately has been mostly very fun.
Yeah.
And there are people who are doing a lot of stressful things on my behalf, which I appreciate. The journey of meaning is weird. And is complicated a little bit by mortality, but is also
I find it to be complicated quite a lot by mortality, actually.
Well, it's more complicated by mortality than it once was.
Right.
Is what I mean.
Yeah.
But I think that it's also just complicated by reality. I think it continues to be very complicated to be a person, and much more so than I thought.
Yeah.
When I started.
Yeah. So
my journey of meaning.
Let me put it to you this way. Have you entered a place of worship in the last year?
I think that every place can be a place of worship, John.
Great answer. Okay.
I've entered nature.
Oh, this is the
times.
Kind of journey of meaning that you're on. You're on a journey of connection to nature, which, by the way, I also am. That's like I'm reading all the like sacred nature literature now. I'm deep into it. It's good stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, one of the things that so here's the thing about cancer is that it is you deciding to not be you anymore, and so the cells start to instead of because all like this is the thing you're like I don't know probably around 50 to 75 trillion cells, John. I don't know exactly how many. protons you have, but you got a lot of cells, and they're all working together all of the time to do you, to be like be you, and that's like one of the greatest acts of cooperation of all time. Like you are a colony of cells,
and bacteria.
They are also cells, and they also communicate with you.
I know.
And so like
they're part of me.
They are part of you.
Not just in some ways. Like they are fundamentally inextricably part of me. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like the thing about your cells is you can extract some of them from you. You could extract your microbiome and still be you, I think. You could extract
not for very long.
Well, it seems you'd get a new one, you know?
Yes. Yes.
Unless you like lived in a sterile spot. You could, you know, you can lose a hand and you're still you. Like
sure.
You can lose
a few blood cells.
You can lose a big
lost some snot this morning.
Of yourself and still be you. You're constantly consuming your own cells and swallowing them and digesting them, which is wild.
Yep.
And for like half of the history of life on Earth, it was just single-celled organisms.
Yeah.
And then
no cooperation within an organism between cells because there was only one cell.
Started to team up and like do things with each other. And like the part where we are 8 billion colonies, each of like 50 to 100 trillion cells.
Right.
Each of those cells replicating billions of times.
Yeah.
And it works at all?
Oh, it's miraculous.
What?
Yeah.
Like how? What?
But then there's this small colony of cells in your lymph that's like, I don't want to be him anymore.
Yeah, well, they just start to evolve back in sort of a single-celled way where they're like, I'd rather, you know, if I can make more of me, there will be more of me. They're not making a decision, obviously, but like there's like any trait that allows them to make more of themselves will be more present in the cellular population because they can make more of themselves. And then you end up with... them evolving to sort of evade all of the systems that are designed to not let them do that because, of course,
they just want to live.
Otherwise, that would happen all the time. And so they're just sort of doing what you would expect them to do, which is following the rules of natural selection. and which is just, you know, things that make more of themselves. There are more of them. And then like they just start evolving to figure out how to keep living, which includes evolving to evade treatment and to evade all of the systems your body has to control them. And it's like such a tricky little guy to fight. But the thing that makes me like, and you know, that seems an inevitability, and it turns out that it is pretty much an inevitability of multicellular life. But the thing that like makes me much more weird about the whole thing is that like thinking about it that way, I don't know. Like, of course, consciousness, big question mark. Nobody knows what it is. Is it an illusion? Am I conscious at all? Do I exist between, like, in the spaces between my thoughts and the examination of those thoughts? Like, where am I in that chain? And like all of it, actually, the reason it's here, and like we could like different perspectives on this, but this is my perspective. The reason it's here is that it helps pass the traits on. Like I am imbued with wants because wants are a trait that increases the odds of a thing making more of itself. And if it's able to make more of itself, there will be more of it. Like that's what I am. But what that has added up to is a creature capable of like not just, you know, making hats and computers and stuff, but like society and love and music and all and podcasts and stuff, like and right. words, like all the beauty and the art.
Yeah. Well, that
and the interconnection between the individual cell colonies, like you're a big cell colony and I am. And then there's like 8 billion others.
Yeah.
And we all like do a whole earth together.
Yeah. That stuff made love, and love is very real and very powerful and very, very strange. It's so strange that we don't think about how strange it is, because if we did, I think we would be like in a blind panic the whole time.
Well, I'll tell you what, understanding that cancer is basically the most natural thing in the world to have happen to a multicellular organism is a little bit blindingly panicking. But
yeah.
It's good that we have lots of systems to stop it.
Yeah, some naturally selected for and some human built. And I think that's also something that I find really lovely about us is that, you know, we participate and are made out of biological systems, but we also create and participate in and reform and restructure all the time these human built systems.
Yeah.
And so there are these problems that we don't know how to solve because they're not human-built system problems. And we look at them and we're like, oh, boy, we better put a lot of resources and try and solve those problems. And that's really important, right? Like that's why we have chemotherapy. But then there are also these human-built system problems, which are the ones that I tend to be obsessed with for whatever reason, where like we know how to fix – we could fix them, you know. Like getting chemotherapy to everyone is one example, right? Like
right.
the difference between inventing chemotherapy and making chemotherapy available to some people and then making chemotherapy available to all people, those are all huge leaps that require a kind of innovation. Like we put a lot of emphasis on the kind of innovation that leads to the discovery, but not that much emphasis on the innovation that leads to availability and access.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I find frustrating about us, but it's also something I kind of love about us that like we can do that. We can do a bit better jobs of distributing what we've learned together. And when we do that, it's great. Like that's great. That's how we figured out, you know, what's keeping the stars apart, not just how to cure cancer. It's how we figured out like why my brain knows that it's going to make a fist before I make a fist.
And and how it can be wrong, that you can fool it. But yeah, it also like it has felt more to me like our inability to enact the world that is more just is a cellular problem.
Oh, like, that's interesting.
Like we are what we are, and we are still trying to figure out how to be it. And it's so like it's so hard to fight it, like to fight against or to like to
see. But
we
make progress on that all the time.
We do. But like, and that's the wonderful thing. But like, you can't. It's taken so long to get from the part where the instinct, and it, you know, we're all like this. Like the first round of empathy is toward our families and toward the people we have the closest relationships with. And to expanding that circle of empathy, it requires tools. It requires innovation. Like, we have to create cultural innovation to be able to do that well.
Yeah. I would almost say that it requires a journey of meaning.
We are all on one, even if we don't know.
That's right. That's what I've been trying to tell you for years, is that you were always on a journey of meaning. You just kind of rejected the idea.
Well, it's because you kept saying it like it was religious, John.
Well,
you knew you were doing that.
That was my mistake. It is religious, but that's neither here nor there. I still can't let that go. But I would argue that nature religions are still religions. Like, religions aren't theistic,
right?
Or inherently supernatural, in my opinion. But I just think it was weird timing in that way. But it has both in the way you've responded to it as a sort of biomedical problem by using it as an opportunity to educate people, to talk to people. And that has the social effect of destigmatizing the experience. But also in the way you've talked about the non-biomedical parts of it, the mental health parts, the psychosocial parts. I just think it's been really helpful for a lot of people. And you've taken who you are and what you do in your natural curiosity and just applied it to this horrific thing. And I don't think I would have done that. I think I would have gotten off the internet. So it's just something I really admire about you.
I did the only thing I know I knew how to do. That's what people kept being like, you're doing this a very interesting way. And I'm like, I don't know what else to do. It's all I know how to do.
Yeah.
Is to make
Well, this reminds me that today's podcast is actually brought to you by Hank's Journey of Meaning. Hank's Journey of Meaning, available now at good.store.
This podcast is also brought to you by Proton Price Transparency. Know what you're paying for. What you're paying for is protons.
Today's podcast is also brought to you by Hank's Billion Dollar Jenga Set.
It's going to be
perfect.
So cool.
It's perfect.
Going to be so cool. I really do want it.
It's a great idea.
It's so fun.
It's a great idea.
Sounds very expensive. We'd have to make them small. And also, this podcast is brought to you by the Woke Moon. Woke Moon keeps coming out.
It comes out every month. It
comes out every month.
Hey, I'm fine with you being woke, Moon, okay? But stop bringing it up.
You don't have to bring it up all the time.
Jeez.
You have to keep coming out.
Feels like every 28 days, it's like, here I am.
It's like you have some kind of cycle. We've also got a Project for Awesome message from Charlotte to Madeline. Dear Madeline, remember Pug? Out of context, quotes aside, I'm so proud that you're my sister. You lead by example, caring deeply, adding humor to the mundane, and not taking BS from anyone. As said in Summer Wars, among the plethora of painful things in this world, hunger and loneliness must surely be two of the worst. But thanks to you, I haven't known either. I love you dearly, Charlotte.
Wow, that was lovely.
It was.
That was great. Charlotte, you're a good writer. Madeline, you're a good sister.
This episode of Dear Hank and John is brought to you by Blue Land. The inside of your toilet is gross, and that's why you shouldn't let anyone in your household drink out of it, including your dogs, please. Let them drink out of the bowl. The toilet is where the poop goes. There is an easy way to clean your toilet, though. Blue Land's sustainable toilet cleaner tablet. Just drop it in, watch it fizz, brush it up, and then flush. It's super easy, and the great thing about Blue Land is they are figuring out how to do all this stuff without any plastic at all. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and for the planet, and with the same powerful clean that you're used to. It uses no single-use plastics in any component, from bottles, tablets, to wrappers, and even to shipping. The tablet packaging, by the way, is fully compostable. Blue Land products are effective and affordable. The toilet tablets are proven to work on a range of toilet stains, including rust, mineral deposits, limescale, and hard water. And look, when it comes to me, I don't really care that much about bacteria in the toilet, because again,
That's where the poop goes. That's where it's supposed to be dirty in there. But it is nice to have something to help you with those mineral deposits, which we have in abundance in Montana. You can get even more savings by buying refills in bulk or setting up a subscription. Their subscriptions are customizable and convenient, so you never run out of your most used products. We have been a Blue Land household for like 3 years now. It's super convenient, super good. Like it a lot. The products look nice. They're easy to use. And again, they do not require single-use plastics or shipping a bunch of water around, because it's like the stuff that's going to be in the water, you can just dissolve it in water yourself instead of having the companies ship water from place to place. Why are we doing this? Never do I think to myself, oh, this is less effective than other cleaning products. It's just not. It's effective, it's easy, and it's affordable. Blue Land has a special offer right now for our listeners. You can get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/dearhank. You don't want to miss out, everybody. blueland.com/dearhank for 15% off. That's blueland.com/dearhank to get 15% off.
So we all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but one thing you don't want to compromise on is your health. When it comes to your health, there should be no compromising. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines or their family group chat or the crossword puzzle just because they're available right now, or take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. You can search by location, availability, and insurance. So literally no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. So go to ZocDoc.com/DearHank and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/DearHank. ZocDoc.com/DearHank. I got to get to this question before we get to the news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon, Hank. Okay. It's important.
Uh-huh.
It's from Julia. She writes, I promise you this was in the question list.
I see it.
She writes, hello, why do people use weighs as much as insert number of elephants to describe how heavy something is? I don't know how heavy an elephant is. I've never touched one in my life. Thank you, Julia. Well, Julia, what if I told you that how heavy an elephant is actually has nothing to do with how much space an elephant takes up, which makes it even harder to understand, because what they really mean is the size of 16 elephants, right? Not the weight of 16 elephants.
No, they mean the weight of 16 elephants.
But nobody can picture the weight of an elephant. I've never had one step on me. I've never bench pressed one. What they're thinking about is the size and space that an elephant takes up when I look at one, or when I look at a picture of one, which it turns out, Julia, has nothing to do with the weight of the elephant.
I think, all right, new idea. We sell everything by elephants. And cheese, and it's just like, it's is it just like
volume
one
or weight?
30
volume
second,
or weight?
32 thousandths of an elephant. That's
volume
what
or weight?
Weight?
Volume or weight? No, I'm out. I only accept volume, because I don't know how much an elephant weighs.
No, it has to be weight, because that's the protons. It's directly transferable. The problem is, and this I do not like about weighing things in elephants, is that there are some elephants that are full grown and weigh 6,000 pounds, and some that are full grown and weigh 12,000 pounds. There's lots of different kinds of elephants. There's not. Yeah. There's like two main different kinds of elephants. But
there's lots of different ages and weights of elephants. And for that matter, while we're on the topic, volumes. How do you account for the tusk? How much does a tusk weigh? I don't know, because I've never held one. How much does like the nose thing weigh? What the trunk weigh? I don't know. I've never held one. I know how much space it takes up, because I can look at it and see how much space it takes up, but I don't know how much it weighs. And this is a fundamental issue, it turns out, Julia, because knowing how big something is does not tell you how much stuff, how many protons are in it.
Yeah.
And I learned that today, Julia, so I'm a little obsessed with it.
You look at an elephant and you're like, that seems awful big. You know, it's moving real slow because of how heavy it is. If it probably if it stood on your fridge would break.
And well, I don't think it would.
You don't think you?
No.
I think my fridge would break if a full grown African bull elephant stepped on it.
Well, first off, you're saying like, I think my fridge might break if the world's largest elephant stood on it, which is not the average elephant. Secondly, I still don't think it would. I think your fridge would hold up just fine. In fact, I need to test this immediately.
All right. Where is the nearest elephant?
It's at the Indianapolis Zoo. It has to be. And so the challenge actually isn't getting an elephant. The challenge is getting a refrigerator into the elephant enclosure, which I suspect will make me the enemy of certain zookeepers.
Yeah, you're like, look, I'm John Green. Do you know who I am?
I have a hit podcast, okay?
I have a podcast and we need to know. We need to know. And also, we're going to... I used to have followers on a website called Twitter.
Do you remember Twitter? I was on it and I was big. No, I would say, have you heard of Apple Podcasts, the app? Have you ever been on their top charts? Have you ever gone to the society and culture section? Have you ever scrolled down to number 173? That's me. That's me. That's who I am.
Someday
I'm
going
to
die
in this
town,
to this elephant.
And they're going to bury me on top of the guy who's on top of the hill. That's who I am. And I'm going to be buried inside of that elephant. I don't know how we're going to make it happen, but it might be today because I'm here to make mistakes.
Did I tell you that I made that joke to somebody who worked at Crown Hill and it bombed?
Oh, no.
jokes are context dependent. And I was like... yeah, you know, I've always just wanted to be buried right on top of James Whitcomb Riley here at the very top of Crown Hill, just so that I could be the writer on top of all the other writers in Indianapolis. And they were like, no, that's not going to happen. Like, James Whitcomb Riley is here at the top of Crown Hill. He wrote Little Orphan Annie.
Yeah, they're used to fielding weird requests from rich guys. That's what that tells me.
That's true.
They're like, we would make that work if we could.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But
it's
instead,
just not
you have to be buried just below. But you can have a mausoleum with a weird leprechaun stained glass window in the back.
That's
of it.
True. But I'll tell you what. I have absolutely. If I'm not getting buried above James Whitcomb Riley, I have no interest being on that hill. I've got no interest being like 30 feet below James Whitcomb Riley. No.
Yeah,
put me with the people.
Give me the chief
in the
one.
Valley.
Oh man. I didn't
what was
think.
What question are we asking?
At the beginning of Vlogbrothers, I thought I definitely wanted to be turned into ashes and sprinkled into a river. But recently, I did have reason to write down what I wanted to, wanted to be done with my dead body, and I was like, I want a headstone.
Yeah. Well, that's first off, that is also exactly what I say. I say I don't really care. I do want a headstone though, because I found it very helpful to be able to visit like my relatives' headstones. Like it's something that I just like doing, and I don't know, I like cleaning them up and everything. But it's I did think like when you got diagnosed with cancer, I did think like, well, I mean, I put all that work into getting him to sign a will, and now I bet he's like super motivated to make sure it's all buttoned up.
Yeah, will's all set, John.
I bet. I'm glad. Sorry about the circumstances.
I'm all good. I don't think I've said it on Vlogbrothers. And like, look, I don't know what you guys listen to, but I just had my follow-up PET scan. I remain cancer-free. I've got about 2 years of mild risk of relapse, followed by 3 years of very low risk of relapse, followed by ideally several more decades of basically zero risk of relapse.
Right. Right. So this was a very good scan. This was as good as a scan as you could possibly have.
Yeah.
It's complete remission. And now it's a confirmation of that complete remission. And
my doctor, as I was leaving, he patted me on the back and he said, congrats on being done. So that's like, I feel like what you need to know. My doctor said I was done.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's part of the reason we're able to make these jokes.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, to be fair, we would make them anyway, but we would make them in private. We were definitely making some jokes in private this summer, but those were private jokes. Yeah, God. Oh, I never want to have a year like this again, and I'm sure you don't either. I keep saying to Sarah, like, this was the worst year of my life, and I didn't even have cancer.
I think you would have handled it okay.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying that, like, of the brotherly experiences, of the two experiences, one unexpectedly becoming the CEO of a mid-sized media company and the other unexpectedly getting cancer, like, there is a preferable option.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. I'm not trying to, listen, I'm not trying to minimize my suffering, Hank. One thing about me is I never do.
And thank you for doing that.
Well, thank you for doing all of the therapy and treatment and everything else. Listen.
Yeah.
There is one shining bright light to this year. This difficult year, this year of troubles and hardship and loss and fear. And that bright shining light is named Ali Alhamidi.
Oh my God.
My God, I love watching that man play football, and I just hope I get to do it for the rest of this season. We got a note, Hank, from a couple of listeners to Dear Hank and John, who said, as American Nerdfighters traveling to England, my husband and I, of course, had to attend the AFC Wimbledon game last Saturday against Notts County. It was excellent. The beginning was terrifying, of course, because Wimbledon got ahead, and we all know how that ends. but by the end of the game, with those lovely penalty kick goals, one goal that confused everyone, and a breakaway that toppled all of our breakaway dreams, we have some thoughts to share. The main thoughts are that Wimbledon won 4-2, and about this new defender whose thighs make us all question our own eyesight. He seems nervous to make a mistake in his new job, because every time he gets the ball, he clears it with an impressive header or kick, but without any thought. Yeah, no, welcome to League 2, Bethy and Burley. That's fourth tier football. If you're a defender and the ball comes to you, you need to get that ball to somewhere else, very far away, the furthest away that you can get it. And that's what Joe Louis is great at. And that's part of why I love him so much. So listen, Hank, we're good. We're good. Wimbledon are good. I don't know how good we are yet. And I don't know if we'll hold on to our two best players, Jack Curry and Ali Alhamidi, over the January transfer window that's about to begin. But right now, we are good. We just beat Swindon Town 4-0. We beat Gillingham 1-0. We beat Notts County, one of the best teams in League 2, 4-2. I forgot that we actually lost to Gillingham or Gillingham, but it doesn't matter. That's Gillingham or Gillingham. It doesn't count. But we beat Notts County, one of the best teams in the league. We beat Swindon Town, one of the best teams in the league. And, like, we're beating these teams handily. We are in seventh place, which is a playoff position. Not only are we in seventh place, more importantly, from my perspective, we're 16 points clear of the relegation zone after just 20 games. This is incredible what's happening right now. Something, even though we have like the 16th or 17th largest playing budget in League 2, somehow we are up with the big boys. We're up there in the heady heights of Wrexham and Notts County and Mansfield Town and Stockport. It's very exciting. We're six places above the franchise currently plying its trade in Milton Keynes. All thrilling stuff.
That's very exciting, John. I got so caught up in it, I didn't even open up my Mars news.
I'll go on while you look for the Mars news. Ali Alhamidi, I think he's scored and assisted more goals in League 2 than any other player. He's 21 years old. I know it's almost impossible that we're going to hold on to him in January. Mm-hmm. I know that the big clubs are going to come calling, that they're going to have £1 million to spend. And I know that we've got a lot of debt to pay off on our stadium. And I know that it's a complicated situation, but I just hope we can hold on to him.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, John, because I very well might be. But it seems like we spend a lot of time talking about those boys who score goals. But that's not the only people who are important on the team. You got to have some good defenders, right? You got to have a good goalie.
Sure.
Like, you got those people.
But remember last season when we lost our best player in January, and then we lost the guy who scored goals, and then we didn't score any goals. It turns out that you don't win a lot of football games when you don't score any goals.
Scoring goals
is hard. You do need everybody, and we've got an amazing midfield right now. In fact, Armani Little, one of our midfielders, scored like a Premier League quality goal from like 30 yards out against Swindon. So I don't know. It's a special team right now. Our captain, Jake Reeves, he's got great energy. We've got some great songs. I feel like the quality of songs among the fans has never been better. Mm-hmm. When I went to the away, I probably shouldn't say this, but I thought it was pretty funny. When I went to the away game in Mansfield, at the end of the game, the Wimbledon fans sang, we get to go home. We get to go home. You have to live here. We get to go home.
Oh, no. Oh, boy. No, please don't cause riots, please, football fans.
I think Mansfield knows. What's going on in Mars?
On Mars, can you guess for me how long you think the Perseverance rover has been on the surface of Mars?
Oh, a long time. Like, since way before you had cancer, which was my main demarcation point in the last couple decades. Mm-hmm. There was when I got dumped my senior year of college, and then there was when you got cancer, and not that much happened other than that. Gosh, has it been it was around the time of the pandemic, right? Because I remember saying, like, Perseverance.
Yeah.
3 years?
It's been 1,000 days, which is about
1,000 days. Yeah. 1,000 days.
It's been 1,000 Martian days, I read, now that I am paying attention, which is very slightly longer than 1,000 Earth days.
Yeah, it's like the 12 ounces as compared to the 12.5 ounces.
Yeah, Martian day is like one,
it's like the Dr.
one
Pepper
day and 45 of... minutes. It's very weird that we have very similar days.
Yeah, it is strange.
But it landed in February of 2021.
Yeah.
So that's
2020. And
yes. 2021.
2020. No way.
Yeah.
That's not 1,000 days.
It was into the pandemic. And that whole 1,000 days, it's been busy. It's collected 23 samples. It studied those samples using its onboard instruments. It's got all kinds of different weird ways to shine different lights and wavelengths and particles at it and do some onboard chemistry.
I just imagine it like sniffing, you know, and being
basically,
like...
Basically, it does some sniffing, yeah.
Yeah, sending word back like, it smells metallic.
And they're using the samples to piece together the history of Jezero Crater. Very cool, very weird. What it was like back when it was an ancient lake bed. I guess it wasn't ancient back then. And it's going to continue exploring that crater, doing more insights and seeing what the area once looked like, including searching for possible signs of ancient microbes that might have once lived there. It's so wonderful. Like, back in my day, when I was a kid, they put these rovers on Mars and they'd be like, it's probably going to last for a week. It's going to be there for a whole week.
Yeah, no. And that was a big win.
Yeah. And now Curiosity is just like, I'm up. What's up? What's going on? Give me a coffee. I can do this.
I can make it another day, boss. I can do it.
Yeah.
But Perseverance is just like a minivan rolling around. Just on the surface, just doing stuff. It's so beautiful. And the fact that it's been 1,000 days just reminds me that, like, there will be another 1,000 days. And 1,000 days from now, we will be in a different world. It will be worse in some ways. It'll be better in some ways. It's utterly unknowable to us. But I hope we're here to see it.
John, how long do you think Curiosity has been on Mars? And it's still operating. It is still doing its mission.
How long has it been on Mars? Gosh,
11
not as, it's not,
years.
I was going to say, it's almost as old as this podcast.
11 years.
Well, is it older than the podcast? It might be.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible. 11 years and it's still, like, by the way, I don't know that there's a robot on Earth that lasted 11 years.
I bet General Motors has some that are just like, yeah, whatever, man. It's like union now. It's fully, they can't retire it. It's got tenure.
Yeah. It's got a pension. It's actually just cheaper to keep it working. Yeah, I guess there are some 11-year-old machines now that I think about the fact that I myself own an 11-year-old machine called a car. But I'll tell you what, it's needed some Earth-based maintenance over that 11 years.
Yeah, you think so?
In order to be a going concern.
Man, John, it's about to be amazing. An amazing time to buy a new or a used electric car. There's like all these different things that are making electric cars super cheap. And in January, there's going to be a rebate for used electric cars and not just new ones, which is very exciting.
Are you going to get one like on January 3rd?
I might get one before then, honestly.
I think that first off, I think you should
hold off.
I don't
get the rebate because I make too much money.
I don't, Mr. Brags a lot. I don't think you should. I have strong feelings about this, as you know. I think that you should get I'm just going to tell you, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is so much better. Like, I also owned a Chevrolet Volt, so I know, and I loved my Volt. and it's great. It's a great car. The Hyundai Ioniq 5 is so much better. And it doesn't look like a fancy car because it's not a fancy car. It's a Hyundai. Fancy.
Yeah. They're not luxury cars, but they're very nice cars.
Yeah. They're fine.
I don't need that much range, and I feel like weird having that much battery if I don't need that much range.
Okay. But, I get it.
But maybe I will need that much range. I don't know. There's nowhere to, they're like, it's very hard to go anywhere from this town.
Like there's not a lot of chargers around?
Well, no. It's just like, there's not a lot of anything around. Like if you want to...
there's not a lot of civilization.
Where are you going to go? If you're going to go Billings. 300 miles, it's about the same stuff as you'd find 100 miles away, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. Our buddy has a cool comedy club in Helena or Billings
it's in,
or something.
It's in Bozeman, I believe.
Bozeman.
And I would like to go. I should go and do a night.
You should go there. That's what you should do with your fancy electric car with all of its range.
Yeah. Mm. That'd be fun.
Well, Hank, thank you for podding with me. Thanks to everybody for listening. You can email us your questions at hankandjohn@gmail.com.
You can do that. This podcast is edited by Joseph Tunametich. It's produced by Rosianna Hals-Rojas. Our communications coordinator is Brooke Shotwell. Our editorial assistant is Debuki Chakravarti. The music you're hearing now and at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.